The following podcast will contain spoilers, strong language, eggnog, and holiday cheer. Viewer discretion is advised. Yippee-ki-yay, mother...
Four guys and a movie. Four guys and a movie. Donnie, Brian, Rob, and Joe reviewing movies for the show. Four guys and a movie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. It is 4 a.m., and that means it's time for the 4 a.m. podcast, where me and a couple of my friends watch a movie from our past and see how it holds up to our new, older, cynical, more cynical selves. I am your humble New York detective, as always, Tony. Holding me hostage today is...
I'm the Twinkie Swollen Desk Jockey, Tub of Cookies.
I'm just Joe.
Oh, Carl! You killed my brother!
I mean, Matt. My name's not actually Carl.
All right, and sadly, Brian will not be joining us tonight.
Sad by whose standard?
Okay.
We miss you, Brian.
But anyway...
Just me? Okay.
I also miss Brian.
Anyway, we have...
I miss you too, Brian.
Every time we say goodbye,
I die a little. All right. Damn it.
My anus is weeping.
Yay!
Yay! It's from the eggnog.
Yeah, that'll do it.
Still dairy, even if it's got no lactose.
Don't I know it.
But tonight we have 40 Storties, 12 Terrorists, and 1 Cop. That's right, tonight we will be discussing 1988's Die Hard.
Greatest Christmas movie ever.
Indeed, this is a little Christmas special for you all.
Absolutely.
Tonight we are discussing, as I mentioned, Die Hard, directed by John McTiernan. We're gonna go over a brief history of the story, where, originally this was, based on a novel by Roderick Thorpe, called Nothing Lasts Forever, and it is a sequel to a previous novel he wrote called The Detective, and, rather, there was a movie originally, this was meant to be the sequel for, called The Detective, starring Frank Sinatra. And Fox was actually obligated to offer him the role originally.
I would like to have seen that.
But, he turned it down, so they then turned to Arnold Schwarzenegger and wanted to make this a sequel to Commando.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
That would have been incredible.
Different movie.
Very
that would
different
have been
movie.
Interesting, indeed.
There weren't enough terrorists, though, because, I mean, he would have gunned them down in, like, 2 minutes.
They'd only speak in German. He's like, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it doesn't quite go for that New York cop feel when it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I'm a New York cop, you idiot.
But, yeah, they went through the entire action hero cast list, and no one wanted to take this role, so they eventually were forced to turn to... our buddy Bruce Willis, who at the time was only known for comedies and television, not movies.
Now, I'm a little fuzzy on the history. Was he already on Moonlighting by that point?
Yes.
Okay.
He was filming Moonlighting during the day and then like, filming this at night.
Wow.
So that was happening in tandem.
Yeah, simultaneously.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, that's just it. That's what he was known for.
I just
before
vaguely
this,
remember Moonlighting existing when I was a kid. I don't remember the exact chronology of it, so.
Yeah, fair enough. I don't either. All right. What is your personal history with this, Joe?
It's pretty much my favorite action movie ever. It's a toss-up between this and Aliens. I mean, I love this movie. And it occurred to me as we were about sitting down to watch it that I might not have ever actually sat down and watched the entire thing, you know, beginning to end. But I still, it left that much of an impression on me. I'm like, this is the movie I compare other action movies to.
Yeah, I have to second that. I love this movie. It's, again, one where I love that they don't... They have a good storyline, but it's not much of one, because there doesn't need to be with action. It just, get your basic plot going, get some action happening, and, you know, have enough going on besides that to keep my interest, and it does that beautifully. Matt.
Well, sort of like Joe... I have kind of limited experience with this movie. It's kind of embarrassing to admit, but up to this point, I had only really seen Die Hard growing up in little, like, chunks when it would be on, like, TBS or TNT or whatever. So, a severely edited version that I only probably saw half-hour chunks at a time. So, this is my first time seeing the whole movie together, but it's so, like, iconic and pervasive in, like, media culture that everybody knows, you know, the yippee-ki-yay motherfucker and everything else about that. So, you know, I had this framework that I thought I knew the film, but then as I watched through, I realized I only knew about five parts of that movie, and it was awesome. Like, I kind of appreciate having fresh eyes and, like, being a little bit older and more mature. Well, being older, anyway. And being able to watch this movie instead of having to look back on something with nostalgia. So, it was kind of interesting for me, having only seen those chunks before.
Rob?
Yeah, I adore this movie. It's one of my favorite holiday movies. I watch it every Christmas. And we watched, you know, my personal copy. So, yeah, I'm a big fan. Big fan.
Now, at what part do you guys check out on the Die Hard franchise? As we were talking about earlier, for me, it's three.
I've seen all of them. I can stick with it up until, what's-his-face, Shaggy. Is that four?
I think
give
so.
Me Liberty or give me Die Hard or yeah. the dumb thing is.
Yeah.
I can hold out until then. Like, I keep getting two and three mixed, like the one with Jeremy Irons. Is that three?
That's three.
I'm okay with, like, the first half of that movie where he's, like, sending him around the city on those crazy missions.
Yeah, that one falls apart at the
end. It really does fall apart at the end. But I do like part two at the airport. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah, I actually also own this on Blu-ray. I got it with a box set, so I do own Good Day to Die Hard. But you can see that as you flip through and see each DVD as it goes on, the later ones are collecting a lot more deaths than the first one. But I think I've only seen that a couple of times. But yeah, that's so probably around the third as well.
Well, it's silly. Like, even the sequels, like even the first sequel, totally loses the whole feel of the original Die Hard. Because it's like, the first Die Hard movie, you believe that John McClane is just like normal, everyday cop.
Mm-hmm.
He's struggling. He's doing the best he can in the situation that he is. The sequels kind of set him up as kind of a superhero.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the sequels come out in the 90s, and that's when we get into the, it's no longer okay to be vulnerable and, like, have weaknesses. If you're in an action movie, you have to be Mr. Badass. You know, maybe you'll take that shot in the shoulder, but, like, you're powering through it like a motherfucker. And just, yeah, like you said, a superhero. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I think the second movie is still, it's a good movie, but the first movie is really, it's like, this is how you make an action movie.
Yeah.
It's like the prototypical action film.
Oh, for sure. Alright, so now I think it's time where we should discuss the cast of this particular movie.
So this is a guy, I never really saw him before, Bruce Willis, as Officer John McClane. I don't know what's up with that guy.
Might have heard of him.
Yeah.
Might have heard a rumor.
Yeah, I mean, he's only like the number three on the 80s action movie hierarchy.
But again, because of this movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And he owns it in this movie. Just great performance. I mean, I don't know if we really need to discuss much with him with this. But, we have Bonnie Bedelia as his estranged wife, Holly Gennaro McClane.
Yeah, I think she did pretty well.
Yeah, I didn't have any problems with her.
I don't think she had a lot to do, but...
Apparently she got put into this at the request of Bruce Willis. He was like, I want that to be my wife.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Did they have any connection, or are you just...
Not sure.
Just passed her on the street and said that. They thought he was like, done. They just thought he was talking about the movie. He was planning on kidnapping her later.
Did she just have her first couple of buttons on her shirt open?
Yeah, I guess that was enough. So it was like, sold. Get her up here.
Why didn't you do that earlier in the movie, then?
And we also have the immortal Reginald Vell Johnson as Sergeant Al Powell as Reginald Vell Johnson.
So... Quickly, I want to throw out, do we believe in the connected universe?
What, that he's just Carl Winslow?
Yes.
Yeah.
As he's in a cop in most things he's in. Mm-hmm. Ghostbusters, yeah, this, obviously Family Matters. I think he's even won, although gay and married to George Went in a new show he's doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. He also did make some appearances in Perfect Strangers.
He certainly did.
Technically, Family Matters is a Perfect Strangers
Ghostbusters, spin-off. Twinkies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Dickless. No.
Is Steve Urkel the kid that he shot?
He should be.
We can only go. Like, we can only
go. How much are we tying this in?
I don't know. That's the question.
No, because then it wouldn't have been an accident.
Well, it may have been Stefan Urkel.
Maybe that's why he had to move.
An accident.
Maybe that's why he had to move and change his name and is now working on his anger issues when Urkel shows up.
Maybe.
But yeah, I mean, he totally takes this the part he's given in this movie and does a great job with it.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of potential for that to turn into just, you know, comedic foil, but mm-hmm. he handles it well. It's a believable character.
He was super likable, yeah.
Yeah. And, like, they even have time to give him a little character development and everything. You don't see that in a movie these days anymore.
Yeah.
I also like that other than the unfortunate Twinkie scene there, there's not just a whole lot of he's fat and can't accomplish anything. He's one of the better cops we see besides McClane himself.
Well, I think that's a story for later as to how terrible these cops are.
Yeah. Oh, yes. We'll get into more of that later.
Who among us hasn't at some point in our lives wandered into a gas station and loaded up like 6 bags of Twinkies at some point?
I do it pretty much every Thursday for when you guys are coming over on Friday.
I do that at my job.
I do it after I leave your place on Thursday when we are out of Twinkies. Yeah. Then I cry in my car.
Yeah.
I can't really speak on that because then I am the fat joke when I do it. But the point was, I like that he could have easily been just, you know, the bumbling fat character that can't do anything right. And he wasn't.
And making his film debut, Alan Rickman, just owning it as Hans Gruber. Yeah. Holy crap, this is an awesome villain.
Yeah. Magnificent.
Okay. Severus Snape, Sheriff of Nottingham. Like, this was the beginning right here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And speaking of the beginning, be prepared for a lot of bad impressions of him as we go on.
Yeah.
As I've already started. But.
Yeah, I mean, just amazing job. This is one of the best villains in an action movie ever.
Very, very layered villain. Yeah. Without a lot of exposition. They reveal so much just by what happens that you're like, holy crap, this guy's a genius.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It's an intelligent team of villains, which is, like, amazing and so rare, especially in, like, 80s action flicks, and even more so today.
Again, really nice to see, like, the smart villains being out some just, you know, we are bumbling idiots and, you know, you're running rampant on us.
And that he seemed to be concerned about his team and their safety and cohesiveness. It wasn't, like, your typical villain cannon fodder thing. They were there to be the muscle, but he was concerned when they started dropping. Not just because he had $600 million riding on it, but...
I mean, also, for not a physically imposing villain, he was very creepy.
Oh, yeah.
A weird mouth.
It's just Alan Rickman's face.
Yeah, it's just Alan
He's
Rickman.
He's just a terrible, terrible looking person.
Yeah, you don't want to be staring down the barrel of Alan Rickman.
He's got like permanent Joker mouth. Just
he does have some luscious lips. That guy.
What is with the just the curls that come from the side of his mouth?
It's
bizarre.
Levioso.
It's all the
Calabra.
Okay, anyway. This is now all about Alan Rickman's voice.
Strapping.
Fuck Die Hard. We're out.
Strapping, guys. This is what it's going to be for like the next hour and 20 minutes.
I think we can stretch that out to two.
Oh, we could.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going by the average.
You kidding me? We haven't even gotten to Sheriff of Nottingham.
Stop it, Rob.
He's
stop.
Talking about after he's edited out half of it.
Okay.
So anyways, we have Paul Gleason as just the worst deputy police chief ever. Freaking Dwayne T. Robinson.
What a pile of crap.
This guy sucks. There's only anything worse than goons in an 80s action movie, it's cops in an 80s action movie. Because there's Reginald Bell Johnson, and there's nobody else, basically.
They just redefine ineptitude.
It seems to almost be this weird comment on authority, because as you go up the chain, they get worse and worse.
No, he was playing Dean Stuffy Britches.
Oh, period. Yes. Yeah. But he was terrible and only was topped later when the FBI show up, who are even worse.
Now, I should say, that's a comment on Deputy Chief Dwayne T. Robinson. Paul Gleason, I think, did a good job with this character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He played
the guy he plays.
And then we have William Atherton. Might as well just be playing William Atherton. Because his character, the reporter, I just kept calling him Walter Peck, but I guess he's Richard Thornburg. Yeah, you just want to punch him in the mouth. And he doesn't even have to talk, and you just want to punch this guy in the mouth. Yeah.
And at the end, they do.
Like, yep.
His glassy fish eyes. just hit him.
Yeah, he just screams sleaze.
I think pretty much every movie this guy's in ends with, like, a face punch.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Or somewhere is this the guy in Real Genius that he blew his house up with popcorn?
Yep.
Yeah. he didn't get a face punch then, but...
Well, he gets his comeuppance one way or another.
Gets a house full of popcorn. And then we have Devoro White as Argyle, the limo driver. This unnecessary weirdo.
Yeah.
Such a bizarre attitude.
I liked him, though. I don't know why he had to be there, but I liked him.
Oh, yeah, I enjoyed him. I enjoyed his performance. What he was doing, he did it well, but...
He was kind of the comic relief.
Yeah.
And, like, it worked that they had it, you know, in moderation.
Oh,
like,
for sure. Moderation. Had we seen more of him, I probably not. We would not have liked him as much.
See, if this were in the 90s, this would have been, like, Chris Tucker or something.
Yeah.
And he would have been following him around the entire movie, probably.
What just happened?
Yeah, he would.
Oh, my God. Shh, guys, don't talk about that, or someone might get the idea to remake this.
Yeah.
That seems to be a trend now.
It will, and it'll star Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
As Bruce Willis. Yes. As John McClane.
I believe him as the everyman cop, totally.
Actually, there is talks of doing a prequel to Die Hard.
No.
Which...
No, thank you.
Yeah, I don't know.
What, about all those cases he had backlogged for 6 months?
Yeah, pretty much.
What I liked about his character is they set him up to be so intentionally useless throughout the whole thing, just to be really, you know, perfect place, perfect time, like that yes moment of an action movie where you're like, they might get away with it. Oh, shit. Yes!
That guy just there's this guy in the garage. Yeah,
he just figured out what's going on.
Yeah.
Or he's just bored as shit from being locked down there, and it's like, I should crash my car and the next thing that moves. Yeah. Well,
again,
the bear
after six Twinkies, that's usually where I'm
driving. And we have a special 4 a.m. podcast mention to Al Leong as Uli, one of the terrorists. This is his third appearance on the podcast.
Well, we might have to get into that, because...
Oh, I don't know. He's just been in everything. He's in everything. Yeah.
Well, no, just because of our... when this we release this.
Oh, yeah, that's true,
but,
yeah.
Yes, we will definitely be seeing more of him as he pops up in a lot of movies, including Big Trouble in Little China, as the Hatchet Man, a part of the Resistance in They Live, which is also on our list. And let's not forget, he is our buddy Genghis Kong from Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, of course. Oh, God.
So we will see you again, Mr. Syphil.
I mean, basically, this guy's job is just to look menacing and then get shot.
Yep. Yeah.
But he does it like a champ.
Oh, yeah.
Like a champ.
He was sadly, Sean Beaning before Sean Bean was Sean Beaning.
Yeah. And sadly, I think once again, a fairly big part of the movie, no lines whatsoever.
I want to see a fight between him and Sean Bean. Where it would just somehow be some sort of double KO.
It would.
Yeah.
Hold back. Well,
two people would come in from the side and kill them both.
Yeah.
And stab them both in the
possibly
back.
Danny Trejo would just kill them both.
Probably Danny Trejo.
So. Danny Trejo used to have this status and graduated from it. Then we have a bunch of terrorists. I don't know if we need to go through each specific one.
Yeah, but overall, just kind of general.
I can't think of anybody here who did a bad job.
No.
I mean, none of the characters were like... Well, No. A lot of those were great characters. Like, the terrorists were all cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I was happy with everyone's performance in this movie.
Yeah, the only people I didn't like here were the people you weren't supposed to like, so... Mm-hmm.
They did their job.
Exactly. As actors. All right, so does anyone want to guess how much this movie cost to make?
Matt does.
No. I'm gonna guess $32.5 million.
$16,000.
I'm going with the low ball.
Yeah. Why didn't you just say a dollar? Seriously.
Because I'm taking this seriously.
I got nothing. Oh, okay. I'm basing this off nothing.
Survey says?
Well, I forgot to write it down, but it was either 25 or 28 million.
28 million.
28 million.
Okay. Right.
You want to guess how much it made?
73... No, 120 million.
42 million.
I'd say it's 130 million.
Oh, you don't actually know.
I looked, but I forgot. I know it was over 100 million.
Actually, no, it was 81 million.
Cool.
Okay.
Wow.
Which so, at the time was a big deal.
I mean, that is a big deal, but it didn't have, like, you know, huge IP potential behind it, but, like, that made less than the Ninja Turtles movie, right?
Mm.
Huh. That's funny. Thinking back on what is, like, what we said, one of the greatest action movies of all time, if not the...
Yeah, but, I mean, you have to also consider, like, back then, he wasn't an action star.
That's true. This was his thing.
Right. It's like when...
Worldwide.
It's like when Keanu Reeves was like, I'm going to make serious movies from now on. You're like, okay.
Oh, yeah. To be fair,
I would have said Jim Carrey, but his serious
movies made $130 million worldwide.
Mm. Okay.
And at the time, this Bruce Willis was given an unheard of $5 million for his performance in this movie.
Yeah.
Wow. That's huge. Not to drag it out too long, but do you know how much Alan Rickman made if this was his first movie?
That was the only thing I saw was what Bruce Willis has made.
Although, do we want to get into John McTiernan and how we think he did as a director?
Yes, it was an 80s good. Action yeah. movie. It was fine.
So I'm sure we will, or I know we will be hearing from him again as he not only did this, but he did Die Hard with a Vengeance, Last Action Hero, and Predator.
Okay. And The Hunt for Red October.
Yes.
Well, I mean, to me, 80s action movies have a very definitive style of directing.
Mm-hmm.
And they all kind of, like, fit within that same realm.
Well, I think the key thing is they kept their ambitions in check. Looked at, like, what could we actually do?
Mm-hmm.
And let's do that. Let's, like, let's not set these crazy goals. Let's set a realistic goal and attain that. And I think that's one of the big areas where, since CGI let you take so many shortcuts, it ended up, like, really diluting the product.
But, yeah. Joe, that was initially my vision, to have people fighting on a soundstage, and then the whole entire movie just CGI'd around them.
All right, George.
Han shot first.
No, my children told me he did not.
You can, just like the holiday Christmas special, you can try and burn all the copies you want. People still have the real video. We know the truth.
Listen, don't ruin my life, day.
I make it my mission to ruin your life, sir.
Grab my neck.
All right, so.
Are you a little
I've never wanted Hans Gruber to shoot someone in the head so much. Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay.
Itchy and sluggy and
Star Wars, it's scratchy. Relevant. Yeah. George Lucas, however, is not. So, let's talk about stuff.
So, yeah, we start out with McClane flying into Los Angeles from New York.
He hates flying.
He sure does.
He doesn't like it.
He gets the advice from the man next to him, which will ruin the rest of this movie for him, that once he gets to where he's going, he should just take off his socks and shoes and start balling up his feet.
Into fists.
Yes. It is the one and only time I hope I have to write toe fists on any sort of media.
Why does that even work? I don't get it. I don't know.
I don't know, but because of this movie, anytime I'm on vacation, I do that in the hotel room.
Do you feel better afterwards?
It's kind of cool, I guess.
But I'll try it. You know, I have not tried it,
I have only a little rug over here, but you could do it. All
right. Well, I haven't been in a plane.
Yeah, I think
Tony picked Joe up and, like, swing him around the room.
We'll try it. We'll try it next time we have to watch a really shitty movie. See if that helps.
Okay. All right, we'll just throw Joe from here into the living room.
I think it's probably just a thing of making yourself feel more familiar with the area, but, you know, spreading out your little toesies.
Well, it just makes you feel like you're on the ground, like it really,
Yeah, it could be too.
See, I don't know, because to me, like, being barefoot feels so unnatural, because I wear shoes, like, all the time, because I'm really weird.
Yeah.
So I think that would make me feel more uncomfortable.
Okay.
Fair.
Then just, like, rub your face on the ground or something.
Oh, I do that, yeah, wherever.
Okay, yeah, well, there you go. Yeah.
Drag your ass on the carpet.
He'll feel does right that too.
Yeah. But anyway, you know, Mr. McClane is bringing with him a large teddy bear.
And he brought a gun.
And a large hand gun.
Yeah. And his gun, yes. Yeah.
Like, right there on the top of the list of things you could apparently just do back in 1988.
Oh, yeah. It's okay, I'm a cop. Plane.
Yeah, just say that. Don't produce any evidence. Yeah. It's cool.
Well,
I'm a cop. Show off a badge or anything.
He's just like, nah.
He's like, hey, I'm a cop.
To be fair, that wasn't, like, the TSA agent that let him on. That was just some guy he was sitting next to.
Yeah, and celebrating the glory of the Reagan years, he carries a gun on the plane, gets off the plane, just lights up.
Yeah, starts smoking immediately.
Number two, Ron, you can just do that in 88.
Straight up dating the film.
How I miss you.
We're all overlooking the fact that he took a bear that large onto the plane, too.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
$50 extra fee and check that damn thing. No.
Yeah, they would have called that a weapon.
Yeah.
Ripped it apart looking for bombs.
Yeah.
It's big enough to put both of his children inside of, which is maybe the point of him buying it.
But also,
or maybe because it's so big, that's why he only has one of them and just completely ignores a gift for the little boy.
Are you sure that was even a gift? He didn't bring that in with him.
Maybe well, he never got home either, so
maybe
I don't know.
Maybe that was his companion? Air quotes.
That's what replaced Holly?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, no.
Director,
the new wife?
Director trademark, though, in the Hunt for Red October by the same director.
Yes.
Also, the main protagonist is bringing a giant teddy bear home for his daughter.
Indeed. Because who doesn't love and a giant? And I do believe the same exact bear.
Nobody does.
That bear's been through some shit.
Yeah.
German terrorists and a Soviet nuclear submarine.
You never believe things I've seen. The horror. Anyway, so this is where we run into his limo driver, Argyle. Who just, weirdo. Yeah, immediately makes an impression on you, whether you like him or not. Just starts yammering on and on, asking him all sorts of personal questions. And
maybe
you know,
it's his first day as a limo driver.
Talking yes. about that 80s high tech. We got CDs, we got CBs, we got a tape.
Yeah, VHS tape in the back.
VHS.
Yeah, well, just the teddy bears riding in the back of the limo.
Yeah,
a weird touch, but I liked it. Again, showing, like, you know, he's more of an everyman. He doesn't even feel comfortable being in the back of a limo. He wanted to sit up front. Mm-hmm. I like that. Nice little touch.
Paparazzi's all around the back of the limo trying to get, you know, underskirt of the bear.
Like, I ain't even wearing a skirt.
Yeah, slut. Yeah.
But we get a cassette tape of some rockin' Christmas music.
Yeah, Christmas in Hollis by Run DMC. One of my favorite Christmas songs.
That probably is one of my favorite Christmas songs, actually.
Yeah. Can't beat that. So he gets over to the office.
Yeah, we jump up to an 80s Christmas party.
And how?
Ain't no party like a Nakatoma party. Nakatoma party don't stop.
Drinking, so banging, and snorting.
Yep.
Yeah, that really was a wild party. Yeah. Really, like, yeah. There was coke, there was some sex going on. Like, that was getting a
I get that
of
it
guys.
Was in L.A., but it was still, like, a Japanese company, which you would expect to be, like, formal.
An Americanized Japanese.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. The more surprising part was how cool the boss was when he caught him. Mm-hmm. Like, again, it's an 80s party. You go into an office, you snort some coke, like, whatever. But, yeah, the boss sees it, and he's just like, yeah, you know.
I don't care as long as you meet your numbers.
They were like, yeah. We're rich and it's Christmas. You, pregnant lady, drink all you want. Yeah. Go ahead. That baby could tend a bar.
Yeah, I also don't want to overlook.
Let's pull it out and see if it can.
In fact, by the time you're done, it's all it'll be qualified to do.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Well, I live next to them. Anyway, I don't want to overlook the his entrance into this building where he's told to use a computerized directory, which once he finally figures out where they are, the guy just tells him, oh, yeah, they're the only people left in the building. They're in this one spot having a party.
So, you just said that.
Yeah, just saved him a lot of time.
It's like, just punch it in on the screen.
I just wanted to show you. No,
I have to respect his customer service apathy, though. That's just what you do.
That's how he was trained to do it.
I suppose
really
so.
Really want to show that screen off.
Oh, you want
but I like,
this?
Up to this point, when he's coming in, like, you know, we see him getting off the plane, and he has the bear, and then he starts loosening up in the limo about his family. But so we're getting the feeling, like, he's visiting his kids. This guy's a deadbeat dad. He probably screwed up somewhere, and he's got to make up for it with his toy. The mom is totally a deadbeat piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she's at work drinking with her friends while her boyfriend, is, like, doing lines of coke on the desk and everything. And she's calling her minority house cleaner to be like, hey, tell my kids I love them. Bye.
Yeah. I don't think she was a deadbeat. Like, she's a working mom. She has, you know, somebody watching them. The quote-unquote boyfriend
and
seems to be...
And the legal alien watching them.
Well, yeah. Yeah, we don't... Well, yeah, we do know that. But, but the quote-unquote boyfriend seems to be doing a lot more hitting on her than she's actually reciprocating.
Oh, yeah, I know. She's not really.
So... And she seems to be doing a lot more work than partying. He's the one snorting all the coke and everything.
Also, Argyle... After dropping off McLean, says he'll just go wait in the garage for McLean to call him, let him know how it went.
Yeah.
Speaking of customer service, this dude is the best. Because
he
waits
on here.
Hours after I would have taken off.
His boss thinks he's on his way to L.A.
Yeah.
He's just using this as an opportunity.
Oh, he's a shitty employee. But if you are the person getting his services, he's amazing.
But he's also drinking the whole time.
So yes. Whatever. Like, jumping ahead a little, but
to the wind by the time you get back out.
He says, you know, he just, it's his duty to just take him there and drop him off. He instead says, hey, here's my number. If she doesn't let you stay over or whatever, you can call me back. I'll set you up with a hotel. If you want some bitches, I'll set you up with some bitches. And then he sits in the parking lot, which that's cool enough. But then after he gets the call from McClane that gets cut off, I would have been like, fuck this dude, I'm out. Like, that's the end of it. He's already been there 4 hours. Bear just told sitting
him to
here.
Stay. Bear told him to stay.
But then, you know, he stays for
you do not deny
several hours after yeah. that and only starts to, you know, think something's up when he hears the police or whatever on the news and then finds out he's locked in. Like, I would have been gone well before
that. I think that's the point. He's not really demonstrating any work ethic. He's like, this is an excuse for me to slack off in this
car
and drink.
I'm not saying I want him as an employee. I'm saying I want to be using his services. Way different.
Bear's all like, you turn that key, I'll turn your neck.
Yeah. But this is like knowing the cashier that's not going to charge you for half the stuff that they're supposed to ring up. Like, I don't want them working for me, but I want them ringing up my groceries, you know?
Anyhow, enter the Snape.
Yes. Yeah, we get a special delivery of miscellaneous Europeans as the truck pulls up.
Literally just comes spilling out of that truck.
Yeah. It's almost like a boy band where we get, you know, the Germans, we get some Swedes maybe, I don't know, like...
Oh, but Troy and Carl have an awesome entrance through the front door.
Oh, yes,
door.
They do.
Oh, yeah.
Anyone want to take point on that? So he comes in and he's like Troy's doing some, like, basketball highlights or something, talking about how he's going to do a slam dunk or whatever, running interference, and Carl just walks up the security guard and just straight up murders him.
Shots him right in the head.
Right in the head. And Troy jumps over the desk, like double foot drop kick this guy out of the chair, and just starts hacking all the security system.
Yeah, Troy is their techie guy. He's a hacker.
And resident Baxter Stockman.
I think that's a strength of the writing in the movie. It's like everything that happens that's action related, you see a tell for earlier in the movie. We saw this guy, lazy ass security guard, didn't want to help, just stay there on the 30th floor, just looking down at his monitor while the guy's trying to navigate. Mm-hmm. You knew that guy wasn't going to look up. He was just dead meat. Mm-hmm. So.
But not only that was a good plan. It just, you know, the one guy's kind of, he's making all these moves, talking about the basketball game, completely distracting the guard.
But a good security guard might have been like, oh, there's two people coming into this building while the only people left are the holiday parties.
Now, the other security guard, meanwhile, by the elevator, that guy didn't stand a fucking chance.
Nope. So, like, the first time we see him, he's just leaning against a corner, appearing to, like, play with an invisible smartphone. I couldn't see what was in his hands, but he was just, like, slacking off and staring at the ground.
That was his second day on the force, and he had 3 weeks left till retirement.
Like,
he was double dead.
He was reading the world's smallest newspaper.
Yeah. I don't know what he was doing, but he got the hockey puck of doom.
Yeah, the exploding hostess cake.
Carl throws a flashbang and shoots him. He could have just walked up to that dude and broke his neck. Like, he would have got no resistance.
Yeah.
And then we've just got an elevator full of troubles. Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do. That's when Snape appears to the party. Yeah. Comes in and kind of, they just start firing and take everybody hostage. Mm-hmm.
Step one, interrupt the couple fucking in the other room.
Yeah. Yep.
Also with that 80s party trope of like, let's just open every door and find somewhere to bang.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Well, that couple saves it for everyone, though, because that gives McClane his window to escape.
Yeah.
But
he didn't grab his shoes or nothing, Jesus.
Because oh, Lord Jesus, there was a fire.
Lord Jesus, they were firing.
Everything.
I got glass in my feet.
Three magazines.
Nobody got time for that.
Like 40 bullets each just to corral those people. They weren't
even
murdering.
Yeah, they were shooting the shit out of that ceiling.
Which, not very economical.
We kind of jumped ahead here, but I do want to say it's a bit odd. Like, I know what's going on here and I get it, but it is a bit odd that McClane, at this office party, in his wife/soon-to-be-ex-wife, whatever's office, he finds a bathroom, starts using the towel to wash his pits, gets half undressed, and then takes his shoes and socks off and starts...
He's really comfortable.
Yeah, he's getting super comfortable with all this. I mean, admittedly, he did just walk in on a guy snorting coke, but...
It's an 80s Christmas party. Yeah, you do whatever you want.
He was on, like, the mild end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
I mean, if Holly hadn't came in and started arguing with him, like, those pants were coming off soon, too.
Yeah.
My pants are almost coming off during that scene. Like, I just felt super comfortable.
Mm-hmm. But, so everybody gets held hostage, except for McClane.
Uses one of the many short-range teleports he uses during this movie to escape.
Yeah, he just gets out somehow.
I mean, I guess since boobs were out, I guess all of the terrorists were looking at those.
Oh, yeah. Everyone was distracted long enough to look at that. And he just makes it down the hallway and up a couple floors, and he's out of there. Mm-hmm. But, you know, our terrorists start enacting their plan. They're trying to break into some safe.
I like that the black hacker guy, his approach to doing everything is to, like, kick stuff. Mm-hmm. He's just, like, kicking walls, kicking computers, and then stuff starts happening.
Well, yeah, it's, I believe he just sets down all the locks and on all the doors and whatever in every gate, and then just kicks the shit out of all the equipment so no one can use it.
Yep.
Like, good for you. All right.
And they also like sliding everywhere. They're sliding down banisters, hopping over railings, just having a good old Wham video of it.
Yeah.
I like Carl's and his brother's exchange where, like, Carl's brother's trying to do, like, some sophisticated hack job with cutting wires and whatever. And then, like, Carl just comes over with a circular saw, just cuts every single wire. While his brother's like, 999!
Was I to understand the what was happening there? Was he was quickly trying to cut that off before his brother electrocuted himself?
Yeah, probably. That's what it looked like. He was like, he really needed to get that reconnected or he was in trouble.
That is tactics I expect from you and your brother.
I was going to say, it really made me flash back to my sibling shenanigans. Like, I've been nearly electrocuted at least 3 times by my brother. And that's unfortunately not hyperbole.
It's probably not even a high enough number.
Okay, well, no, I just can't remember all the times he actually did electrocute me.
That's true. There is brain trauma.
Yes.
But
speaking of brain trauma, they take the boss up to the office to try and get the information out of him that they need to get into the safe.
In a really creepy elevator ride.
Yes. Yeah, Alan Rickman's like, making some moves here.
He is giving him the lips.
Yeah.
Look at my mouth.
The full
Rickman
lips.
I'm German.
Lips.
Wait, I'm British. Wait. Shit.
Yeah, can we talk about his accent in this movie? Like,
That shirt feels very nice against your chest.
Yeah, dude has more trouble making up his mind than Tommy Wiseau, like what accent he has on at any given time.
It is just a Hans Gruber accent.
Yeah, he is Hans Gruber. Part Oxford, part Oktoberfest.
Maybe this was wearing silk boxers. They let the Bezos breathe. If you know what I mean.
Would you like to taste my every flavor of beans?
My birthday soup.
I don't know if this is because this was his first movie, or... I mean, admittedly, it was kind of hard because he's jumping between...
He was making a brand, man. He had
he
had to get his lips in there somewhere.
So do we
let's take that out of context.
Do we think he was German trying to pose as British to...
Well, that's what I was getting at. He's definitely, you know, he seems to be German.
His name
but
sounds
he's,
German.
Yes, but he's talking in an American, you know, it's just English and sometimes in an American accent. So I don't know if maybe this
was
some kind of...
He was faking the American accent when he was trying to fool John.
Yes, but my point is, like, he's bouncing between, like... different, you know, accents and whatnot, and who he's talking to, and maybe this is just too much for him to handle. Or maybe we're supposed to get the idea he's been around the world and just...
Hans Gruber's a lot of things.
Yeah, maybe Christopher Lambert style.
Also,
he's collected all the languages into one.
A lot of people in Europe.
It's the opposite of Christopher Lambert.
Yeah, let's not pile him in with Christopher Lambert.
Because he took like all the things that sounded cool and made a cool voice from that. Christopher Lambert just took everything terrible.
Made that in his voice.
Wow,
now that's nice.
I'm just talking in the...
I'm broken, I can't.
I'm just talking in the how we got there, not what became of it.
I'm going to steal your money. I need the vault codes.
Anyway.
Mr. Takagi gets taken to the office.
Yeah, when he won't give up the information, he says, you'll just have to kill me, and he does. He just fires his head, and blammo, it's an explosive watermelon.
I appreciate his, his...
Yeah, he went down with honor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was just like, you're going to have to kill me.
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I mean, this scene, I guess, is revealed that, his code is, like, the first lock that needs to be unlocked on, like, a 7-lock vault.
Yes.
That inside the vault, there's $640 million worth of bearer bonds. What the fuck are corporations yeah, need yeah. that? You know? I don't know.
Why would
There's
you
a whole other story going on there.
Yeah, like seriously, what were they up to with that?
I don't know. That's.
I guess you could put it in a vault, but you could just have them not be bearer bonds and put them in a bank as well.
Well, the only explanation I could think of is maybe he was about to take those overseas to start construction on whatever that bridge dealie they showed in the model.
Yeah, but usually they do that through legitimate channels, not the sort of things you would need on large bearer bonds. Yeah.
Again, that's the closest I can explain. I have no idea why else.
Like, not that this movie needs any improvements, but if I were to improve on a little bit, I would have had, instead of they brought those missiles there that they use later on, I would say they found the missiles in the building because they knew they were there because maybe they were using the bearer bonds for some, like, weird illegal arms deal or something. So maybe that was in there too, but I don't know.
Either way, that's Die Hard too.
Yeah, just doesn't make sense that there's that much money just fucking sitting in a vault.
Yeah,
we could have used a better explanation.
Thinking to do a flyover seat, there was like 10 bags of bear, but he's just gonna carry all that crap.
And it was a huge vault with not much in it. Take up a lot of space.
It had artwork in it and, you know, statues and stuff like that.
Or maybe that's it. Maybe he's some crazy eccentric and he thought, you know, much like keeping your money under your bed to keep it safe, he kept it all in there along with his armor and whatever the hell else that was.
The hacker was there to approach the first, like, 6 out of the 7 locks.
Yeah.
And they just had that standard movie approach to hackers of, it just works. They do something, some numbers and colors flash on the screen, and it's like, yes, I did it.
Well, a few of them he gets through with a drill.
He was also drilling into those things. Yeah, I think it was, I think he was breaking a certain part so he could, like, bypass the system or whatever.
Yeah, so I think there was some detective work with the whole, like, he found out the guy's name translated in English, and that was one of the codes.
I don't know how the hell you know.
Was really not worth dying over, because it did not take him long to figure it out.
No, not at all. But it was pretty terrible.
I do like, immediately following that, after Takagi gets shot, that that kind of insight into John McClane's character that we see, that he's not that perfect action hero that I can just handle anything. He has that mini freak out about letting Takagi die. And he's just like, you could have saved me. No, you would have been dead too. Shit. And, you know, he rationalizes it quickly. But you don't see that a lot in action movies. Yeah. Usually it's like, take the gun, go around the corner, wait to kill somebody.
That's exactly what I was getting at before, where he's not just the superhero who can just bust in and start firing wildly. He actually gets scared away and is like, well, I had to let that guy go because there's no way I would have been able to take all those guys at once.
That is the exact opposite of Commando. How on earth were they going to make this a Commando sequel?
I got nothing for you on that one.
Just imagine Arnold just with his shoes off, like, making go fists in the carpet.
You could have saved him, John Matrix.
I need my barrel. Where's my barrel?
Also, he would have been on the plane with an M60. Yeah. It's okay, I'm a commando.
He would just grab their missiles, just throw them, huck them at them.
I'd probably, just for good measure, kill the guy that was sitting next to him and left him on the plane.
So McClane
broke his neck.
But yeah, part of the whole, he's a bit more vulnerable. He comes up with a very poor plan of just, how do I deal with this? Set off the fire alarm right next to me. But of course, these guys are, you know, prepared enough that they know how to deal with this. And they send somebody up there to check him out, where we get our second bit of teleportation.
Yeah.
Potentially. I don't know what happened here, but...
Well, he sets up a circular saw to go to run. And I'll grant you, circular saws, when you start them up, they take a while to power down after you let go of the power, but not that long. So this German guy is checking out the roof, or the construction zone, and he hears the power saw, goes
Johnny
over there
workout
to check it
pants.
Out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a weird looking man.
Yeah. So he is the Carl's brother.
Yep.
Was it Franz?
I don't know. I think so, yeah, Franz.
And he's wearing this, like, turtleneck sweatshirt.
And tight yoga pants.
And tight yoga pants, both the same color.
He looked like he was about to do the dance from Fame.
Yeah, with his John Denver hair.
It's something that like, a lot of women would wear, and but still wouldn't leave the house looking like that.
Right. Well, unless you...
They go shopping at Trader Joe's like that, or Walmart.
In the 80s, though, they wouldn't leave the house looking like that.
But anyway, so he...
But also, this guy's, like, 6'2". He's, like, a really, like, scary, imposing piece of Euro trash. Like, it's not. It's like, you want nothing to do with this man.
He's a big dude.
Yeah.
And he goes to investigate, and McLean just pops out from behind some drywall or something. Yeah.
Like, he was clearly behind that pallet, and the guy jumps behind it, and he's not there all of a sudden.
Yeah. Perhaps the implication was that he was behind a different pallet, but I...
No, again, he did a short-range teleport. That's
like, they start a wrestling. Bam.
But yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's got the gun to this guy's head, but the guy's like, you can't hurt me. He's like, yeah, I can. They start just going at it.
And McLean immediately loses his gun.
Yeah.
Like, he dishes it for some reason.
He throws his gun.
Yeah, like...
I'm sure it was supposed to be like, oh, you drop your gun, but, you know. Woo! It's like, I'm not an action star.
I know the pressure point where I can hit you to make you throw your gun.
So, yeah, he gets the guy into a chokehold, they start wrestling, and then they just fall down a bunch of stairs, and John McClane takes it a lot better, I guess.
I gotta give it to the stunt guys on that one, because the way they fell, it looks like that guy actually died.
Yeah,
like,
that looks like it hurt.
They might have had to drag his corpse out of there and just, like, write it in as a death.
Put it in the...
No way that didn't hurt.
Put it in the furnace.
Yeah. That... But yeah, they sold that real well.
This leads to my favorite scene in the whole movie, honestly. He gets Franz's gun and sets the corpse up in the elevator, sends it down to the 30th floor where all the hostages are and where Hans is. And he's got this guy wrapped up in Christmas lights with the words, "Now I've got a machine gun, ho, ho, ho." Written in blood on it. Yeah.
How.
Read by Alan Rickman. And that's not even... That's borderline psychopath. Yeah. Not even borderline. That is just straight up psychopath. That's
probably speaking of psychopath, scene. Back in the day, like, back in the glory days of Vampire the Masquerade, that was the picture for Clan Malkavian.
Oh, yeah.
Crazy Clan. It was... he was wearing a t-shirt that said, "Now I have a machine gun, ho, ho, ho."
Yeah, like, I understand that, like, he was in extraordinary circumstances and he had to play some head games, but he had to take time to very neatly, with good, clear penmanship, write in that guy's blood on his shirt.
So he had to do with the elevator, too, to get it to go down.
But also, like, I don't care what you have to say about head games. Like, that was a bad idea. Now they know you're there, they know you're armed, like, you totally gave yourself away.
Well, but it did work in his favor, though, because he was on top of the elevator doing a little intel work.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, taking notes on what they said about the corpse.
Started writing down the names, the brother on his arm, so that's how they got Carl's name.
Also, I should point out, the police and fire department were on their way, but now they've gone home.
Yeah.
Because they called and said that the alarm was a bug in the system.
Correct.
Which caused John McClane to go, "Turn around, you stupid motherfucker!"
But, turn around. Now, with this new intel, he makes his way back up to the roof, because he also now has a radio that he stole off this guy.
Speaking of the radio, I just want to say, like, most 80% of the problems we have right now are solved just by, or would have been solved by not being in 1988. We're like, the phones are dead. Oh, the fire alarm is the only way to contact the outside world. And we're looking at it, like, back in the day, in the 80s, we were like, oh, shit, they cut the phones to that building. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
They're fucked. And they now we're just everything. Like, how did we live like that? Those primitive savages.
Because now it would have been, oh, I dropped my cell phone. Or
one of the other 30 people here, please take it out.
Yeah. Or they would have had a ridiculous program that blocks cell phones.
Yeah. Some kind of weird EMP that only destroys your cell phone signal.
Batman somehow modified every cell phone in the world so he didn't see through it.
Honestly, I had the same reaction recently when I rewatched Godfather, where I was just like, you know, most of this could have been dealt with if you just had a cell phone. But that's the times. But yeah, so...
What we're saying is cell phones ruined action movies.
Yeah.
Horror movies, too.
And horror movies.
But, But speaking of this radio, I cannot begin to tell you how this works. Because I don't know why everyone's on the same signal sometimes, other times not so much.
Well, they probably put it on the emergency band so that they could hear any police chatter that came through on it.
But then wouldn't the emergency line always get everything you're saying?
He's also a cop, and they may have, like, a set emergency line. I know he's in Los Angeles, but he may know, like, it may be a common knowledge.
But then they shouldn't have heard it.
Yeah, they were hearing...
If he's switching stations to get the police, they shouldn't have heard it.
But I'm sure, like you said, they probably have at least one set to the emergency line because they need to know what the police are doing.
Okay.
to keep track of all
And Gruber did seem to say it was an inevitability. Yeah, he said that was all part of the plan anyway.
Fair enough.
So that's my guess.
I don't know.
No, that's
that was
that's,
my first thought too.
No, that's fair.
But he does get to the roof, McLean, and does call out to the police on the radio.
Yeah, starts yelling at them because they immediately think it's a hoax for some reason, which is kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, these are the worst cops.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, but also,
you got a call from the security guard that the fire alarm was fake. Okay, fine. Yeah. But this is your second call from the same building saying there's a problem.
But it's also an 80s that? Christmas party.
That's true.
Yeah,
everybody is coked up and crazy.
But yeah, they're saying like, good cops the fire alarm was tripped before because there are terrorists in the building. And they're like, oh, come on, buddy. Get off the line.
Honestly, that should have been their defense when they called about the fire alarm. They should have been like, look, man, it's an 80s party. We're all cooked up. Yeah.
No, I argue.
Don't be surprised if this isn't the last one for you.
Cooked up.
I've called that in before myself.
No. I argue these are shitty cops in the 80s in an 80s action movie with an 80s action party going on. If they got that call, they would be totally there, ready to cope up with the rest of them. Yeah. Like, oh, let's go check that out and have a few beers when we get there.
That line has worked before. I can't come into work today. What's the matter? Oh, I was at an 80s Christmas party last night. I'm so cooked up right now. Oh, just rest up, man.
Try it tomorrow.
But they send a cop out to the scene.
Yes. When we get our buddy Carl Winslow.
Triumphant entrance of Reginald Bell Johnson.
As he's buying Twinkies.
That's a big Twinkie.
Lots of big Twinkie.
And lots of Twinkies.
We've been knocking some things about the 80s, but one thing you could appreciate from back then, that gallon of gas was 79 cents.
Yes.
Yeah.
You'd have enough money left over to buy some Ecto-Cola.
I'm pretty sure at the time that was cheaper than a gallon of water.
And Twinkies only had about half the artificial ingredients.
Yeah.
That's true.
I would say the only argument on that is it was not cheaper than a gallon of water because back then we weren't dumb enough to buy bottled water. Mm. So water was free from your tap.
Yeah.
Not if you lived in L.A. You didn't want that water.
Yeah, true.
Maybe. But this guy harasses him a bit about buying the Twinkies. She claims it's for his pregnant wife. But then he heads over to the plaza, starts checking things out.
He looks at the building, and gunfire is going off on the roof. Yeah. And he's like, whatever.
And having talked about and having seen Die Hard 2 and 3, like, I would say, like we talked about while we were watching, Carl Winslow and a Twinkie would have been a way better sequel than anything that came out of the series.
Well, you don't like the idea of Samuel L. Jackson? Or was it Samuel L. Jackson or Bruce? No, Samuel L. Jackson is driving the car as Bruce Willis is getting shot up out of the sewer by the water pressure.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Carl Winslow and a Twinkie.
Like I said,
Carl Winslow and a Twinkie.
The whole third act all the way. Of that honestly, movie is just bizarre.
Argyle and the Bear, I would have taken.
Replace it. Yeah. Bruce Willis gets launched out of the sewer. Carl Winslow and a Twinkie are just waiting for him at the top. He's like, here you go.
True.
No, Argyle and the Bear are the villain.
Carl Winslow and the Twinkie.
Argyle has somehow collected all the bear bonds and started his own criminal empire.
No, Twinkie! The bear shot you with a poison dart.
But the bear is the boss.
I'll suck the poison out.
Because they are his bear-a-bonds.
Wow.
So now we have another good action sequence.
Yeah, they're fighting. They're gunfighting on the roof.
Yep.
For reasons. There was a poster with some boobs on it.
Yeah, of course. He gets basically rushed back into the building because they're onto his shtick and they're chasing him down. He finds a way into this elevator shaft.
Yeah, Hans has a plan to totally just seal him in the elevator.
Nice.
But Carl isn't having it. Carl wants blood because his brother's dead. So, in his greed to try to go, or his wrath to try to go kill him, he lets him get away. And by doing some kind of, like, parkour jump in the elevator, where he's using his machine gun as a kind of like a brace and the strap as a rope to rappel down.
Yeah, no way that would have worked.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing with that is, like, he falls. The strap comes undone or something, and he has to jump and grab the vent that he's trying to get to.
Mm.
But the stuntman doing that missed the vent he's supposed to grab and just fell. And then he grabs the one right below it, though. So they were like, all right, we'll use that as the take.
Oh, really?
Oh, nice.
So that wasn't supposed to happen. Yeah.
That's right. Awesome.
But that made it like a thousand times better.
Yeah.
Your heart stops when you first see it.
Yeah, they nail the tension in that sequence. Mm-hmm.
Oh, for sure. That's
movie. Do you know offhand? I mean, I'm sure they took precautions, but do you think that jump was bad enough where that guy was going to be foobarred if he didn't make that grab?
I would imagine there was something at the bottom of that.
I doubt it. That
he'd
that looked
just land in water or something.
But still, good on that guy, because that didn't look like a lot of vent to grab.
No.
No.
That looked like a matte painting, so I'm guessing that was, you know, maybe three stories tops.
Right.
But, so he grabs onto the vent there and climbs on in, getting real filthy, and using the lighter he picked up before to light his way.
He's yammering a bunch of stuff about,
feeling like some kind of microwave dinner or something. Mm-hmm. But,
Carl's not done.
Yeah, Carl hears the noise, and... Mm-hmm. He gets down a couple floors and starts checking out what's going on there.
Okay, these are some good goons. Like they know tricks. They've got, you know, they're pretty relentless. Like you really do feel like he's in danger. It's not like in a lot of action movies these days where you're like, oh no, they're gonna find him again, but he's just gonna fuck them up.
Yeah, Carl is like an A-minus class goon.
Yeah,
like everybody else is about a like B-minus B goon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
but they're still good.
I think these goons, they would have won if they just had a little Ritalin. Because their only problem is they get so close to finding him all the time and killing him until someone's like, hey, there's a thing over here. And they're just like, I'm done with this, and walk away. Like
everyone wins with a little Ritalin.
Yeah. Had that guy just kept firing or kept poking, he would have caught him.
Yeah, I mean, he's got him stuck in the air vent. He riddles it with bullets, and then he comes up with a pretty good idea to just poke it with the barrel of his gun to see if, you know, he's actually on that panel in the vent. He's about to reach the one where McClane is, and then he gets the call to come back.
Not even to come back, just because they're like, hey, there's cops at the window.
Yeah,
let's
that's
go.
What it is. Yeah, go check out the cops.
So, he uses this opportunity to get down into one of the office rooms. I believe this is where the dark-haired man attacks him with the...
The Italian guy, for no reason.
Yeah, Italian, question mark.
The swarthy gentleman.
Yeah. So he gets the drop on that guy. And that guy's just like, there's a lot of screaming
like
going back
swarthy
forth.
Swarthy is code for greasy.
If the shoe fits, McClane would have put it on. There's a lot of yelling going back and forth. So this other blondor shows up and he starts opening fire, but McClane just takes him out.
That was a masterful like little bit of deception on their part, because the guy just got McClane to be shouting and scared the whole time, and then just hit the deck while his buddy whipped around the corner and started shooting.
But McClane takes that guy out real quick, so it didn't quite work. And
a little quicker on the draw than the blondor.
Yes, our swarthy gentleman gets on the table and starts firing as McClane's scurrying his way up to the other side of the table.
It's like, you're out of table. Next time you get the opportunity to kill some guy, you take the chance.
I will, and starts firing up just into his crotch area.
As I read on IMDb in this scene, the director wanted extra loud blanks to make it hyper-realistic, which is firing under a table with the gun very close to his ears. Bruce Willis has permanent hearing damage.
And
you can tell from his saxophone music, too.
So he takes out two more of these guys. I believe at this point he gets on the radio with our buddy, and, you know, they start having a little back and forth.
And start talking some shit to
each other. He's telling him, you know, like, what do you think you are, some kind of cowboy? And he's like, yes, I do, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
But now before he tosses the Italian onto Carl Winslow's hood.
That's Carl's about to leave. Because again, this is when he goes in and is just like, it's an 80s party. I'm going to take off. It's nothing.
Yep.
But he suddenly gets a man thrown on the hood of his car.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nope, I got to check this out.
And then they just open fire on him with machine guns.
Well, like, he's seen everything now.
Oh, yeah, the jig is up.
Yeah.
But he slams on reverse. A little too much. It's just flying back through everything. Ultimately crashes his car.
Did I do that?
But now police are informed.
Yeah, and we get this kind of subplot of the local radio or news station, rather.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's where a bunch of people that really suck start showing up. The first of which is Walter Peck.
Just a villain. This is Walter Peck with Dickless News.
Yeah. It's true. Man, it's not happening.
Yeah, we get the police back up now.
Yeah, the police are showing up. They're being utterly useless. Yeah,
boss is just terrible.
The news guy is off on, trying to get there. He's utterly useless and just causing problems.
The boss just straight up writes McLean off. Like, who's this guy? He's probably just a terrorist pulling your chain. It's like, he killed one of them. There's the dead body. It's on my car.
Yeah, he quickly is just like, I don't believe this guy inside. Who the hell is he? He's probably a prankster. I don't know what's going on. Let's just send a SWAT team in.
Yeah. it's literally that. He's like, we can't trust him. We don't know anything what's going on inside. Yeah. Send in SWAT team.
Yeah.
Now, is this like, do you think, commentary on like layers of government bureaucracy where the movie is showing that like one filthy man with a handgun doing his thing is far more efficient than all of these government agencies lumping together and making terrible decisions?
That's kind of what I was getting at before, because like as we go, McLean's a badass. He's doing his job. Carl Winslow is, a beat cop, sort of, but he's, he's all right. His boss is just total garbage and messing everything up. Whoa. The FBI show up, they're far worse and just want to kill everyone.
He's only a beat cop because he killed a teenage boy. Who among us hasn't made that mistake at least once? A
couple of times. But
yeah, for real.
It wasn't a mistake. But so, yeah, they go from zero to SWAT team in 0.2 seconds. Mm-hmm. They send in the first group of guys who get immediately gunned down at the front doors of this building.
Mm-hmm.
So they decide to send an APV in through was it the front door as well?
Yep.
I think so, yeah.
Yes, same front door. So this thing comes barreling up the stairs. Doesn't make it up the stairs first.
Yeah, that is true.
Well, it gets about halfway up.
Well, yeah, because it's going up the stairs, and then there's a middle railing they seem to somehow miss, and they just slam into that, and that's the end of their trip.
That stops it.
Yeah.
And this one, is it Carl and Viggo have the rocket launchers?
Yeah, well, it wasn't Carl. It was Viggo and somebody else had the missile launcher. But, like, I don't get it.
A couple of Aryans.
First off, like, is the SWAT team in this car? Like, what's the next plan after this rams through the door? Like, it's just there.
Yeah, it's just there.
Nobody else was making any moves.
And a lot of the dialogue that starts coming out here, like, could not be delivered by anybody but Bruce Willis as we look back on it. Like, we think about any of those other action people they were talking about. Just, like, a lot of it is, like, shitty detective novel stuff, almost. Like, it's just gruff, cliched, for lack of a better term, just, posturing. But coming from Bruce Willis, it sounds fantastic. And you're like, yeah, let's do this.
Tell me you don't want to hear Frank Sinatra say yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yippee-ki-yay.
Keep the change, you filthy animal. <Yeah. laughs>
So, yeah, they set up, like, they brought with them an anti-tank missile launcher.
Or Arnold swearing, "Well, you think I'm trying to order a pizza?" So.
Yeah.
Think I'm trying to order a pizza!
They just casually roll this giant missile by on a table with a
torch. Well, they drop one off the table.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nothing casual about this. Yeah.
Viggo takes it in the junk first.
Yeah.
It's just a sudden little Three Stooges sketch out of nowhere.
Well, in fairness, they had to go fast, so yeah. But still, they brought more than one anti-tank missile launcher with them.
Yeah, they were...
I guess the standoff with the cops was in the plan.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they said it was inevitable.
Yeah.
And necessary.
They blow up the vehicle, and the guys got out, I guess?
No,
those were the guys that got mowed down when the...
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So... Because it almost looked as though that meant that car then ran them over to get in there. That's what it kind of looked like.
No, because it didn't get all the way up the stairs.
Or were they just trying to get behind it?
Well, no, it does show at one point, it shows the four wounded guys on the ground.
Yeah.
And then it pans somewhere else and that car is there. Like, they did go a distance away.
Okay.
And they were out of the blast range of the missile, too.
Yeah. But, yeah, to try and help deal with all this, McLean just takes a chunk of C4, loads it up with some explosives, or some detonators, and chucks it down an elevator shaft.
Here's where you need to suspend some disbelief.
Because
I don't know how that worked.
I don't know either, but...
What does the computer monitor do? Like, he put detonators in there.
I think he did it to kind of muffle the blast, or to keep the C4 on the chair.
I don't know, because, like, first off, I like how he's like, I don't know how many detonators to use. There's just one. It's like, that's all the detonator does. But then he puts a computer on that. Maybe the computer was to set off the electrical charge, because, like, C4 doesn't get set off by impact or flame. It's set off by an electrical charge.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what he was thinking with the computer, but it's not plugged into anything, yeah. So it's not getting any power.
Well, I was thinking one of two things. Either A, because he clearly doesn't seem to know how big this explosion is going to be, so maybe he was hoping to make this into more of a shrapnel grenade, or B, like, these things acted as little plungers, and that's... I'm not sure how the detonators were supposed to work.
Maybe they're impact triggered.
Yeah, and maybe he was hoping that they would, with the I thing guess. On top would... I don't know, but...
Either way, he made a bomb somehow.
Yeah. Whatever, it worked. Big time.
Boy, did it work.
Blew the entire front of this building.
Mm-hmm. Like, I'm just not sure what that would have done to the building's structural integrity.
Oh, C4, yeah, it wouldn't have been good.
Like, how was that building still just like, yep,
luckily,
just hanging out?
Like, in true Hollywood fashion, that C4 went from a high explosive to a gasoline fire explosion.
But, yeah.
Like... In real life, it would have blown the building down.
Yeah, anybody within, like, 50 yards of that would have been knocked over.
And I guess it killed two more of the hostage takers here. Little terrorists, or robbers, or whatever we want to call them.
So at this point, they're down to, what, like, seven?
Yeah, five are dead.
Yeah, they're down to seven. And now he's on the phone with on the radio, with the cops, and just giving them some smack talk big time. Which I just enjoyed. But anyway, we get the douchebag guy decides this is his cue to try and make a deal.
So Ellis.
Yeah. Climbs up there. He's like, oh, yeah, me and McClane, we go way back. He's my buddy. I'm the reason he's here. Da da da. So he gets on the radio with him.
Another fun fact I read. When he walks in the office and he's like, Hans, Bubby. Like, he just did that. Like, that was an ad lib. So, like... Al Rickman, how he looks kind of confused. He was just like, why'd you say that?
Bubby!
I wouldn't be surprised if a few more of those, because, like...
There's a lot of stuff in this movie that's ad-lib.
Yeah, he's tossing around a lot of babies and whatever. Yeah.
But I love this scene.
Yeah,
I love how... because Ellis is totally serious. He's like, I got this thing that's going to save my ass and you know, totally help you guys out. And, like, Hans is like, look at this tool. I'm going to kill him. Like, right in the
beginning. Yeah, he's already dead.
Yeah, he's like, I'm just going to kill this man. But let's humor him. Let's see where he wants to go with this.
Let's see what we can get out of this.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so he tells him, you know, I'm his friend or whatever. I can get him down here. Gets on the radio. Is like, just turn yourself in. It'll all be fine. Blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, Bruce Willis is like, no, you're an idiot. They're going to shoot you. And they do.
And this scene has a lot of layers, because they managed to simultaneously give you a character that's so insanely douchey that you sympathize with the bad guys for a minute, and you're like, do it. And meanwhile, Bruce Willis is, or John McClane is legitimately distraught on the radio. He's like, they're going to kill you, get out of there. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to save the guy, but you as the audience member are still like, do it, right in the face.
Kill him.
So it's just an interesting little bit of, like, you know, mind game that they have going on there.
I also like that this was a great way to just kind of remove any obstacle he had with getting back with his wife, because this guy was hitting on her, but, like, now he's going to die, but Bruce Willis doesn't have to kill him, so his hands are still clean.
Lovely.
It's a good
idea.
Yeah. I'm going to be a douche. I'm going to try and, you know, turn you backstab Gruber. You or whatever. Yeah. But, yeah. I forgot where we go from here, actually.
Well, this is when Hans lists off some rather ridiculous demands of a whole bunch of terrorists. He wants
Yeah.
He wants helicopters on the roof.
The whitewash.
Right.
Yep.
Now that the FBI has shown up, they're kind of taking command and being big dicks.
Johnson and Johnson.
Troy is almost through the locks.
Yes.
We're going to move into natural male enhancements.
Yeah, again, Johnson & Johnson, another movie I wouldn't mind watching. But, they're doing all that, and somehow, I believe, this is when Hans makes his way up to the roof to check on the detonators, I believe?
Yeah, and I think he just comes up with the idea, he's like, I'm just going to pretend to be a hostage.
Well, yeah, McLean gets the drop on him, so he's smart and quickly just turns from, I can't fight this guy, so I'm going to pretend like I'm a hostage and get away.
He cleverly ditched his gun and his flashlight, anything that would make him look like he's actually, one of the bad guys.
Yep.
And this whole scene, Ablund.
Everything there. Okay, explain how bad the accent is.
Yeah.
I am an American.
It wasn't even supposed to be in the movie.
Hey, man.
But they found out that, I guess, that he can do a good enough American accent. According to the director.
Enough. I guess they're comparing it to Schwarzenegger.
They're comparing it to looking at Alan Rickman's lips normally.
They had, some of the stuff was worked out, but I guess a lot of it is just ad-libbed, and then they didn't rehearse it at all.
Don't shoot me!
Yeah, Alan Rickman's pretty quick himself.
He was walking a little bit there.
Pulled off some Keanu Reeves.
Yeah,
he did go full Keanu Reeves.
But so McLean, is like, well, maybe you can help me out or whatever. Asks him if he wants a gun, which he takes, and then quickly turns it on him. But
as thorough of a man as Gruber is, I'm a little surprised he didn't think to check the gun.
Check the gun, while McLean's back was turned. Yeah,
it's a lesson we learned in Tremors.
Yeah. But also he was very arrogant.
Yeah,
so
just assumed this dumb Yank wouldn't know what he's doing. But
also he needed the detonator, so I would have stuck with the character a little bit longer to see if he could take me to the bag of detonators.
Hmm.
Yeah. But either way, it worked out for him.
Yeah. But it turns out the gun was empty, and he's held hostage for a moment, but then his buddies show up.
The tables have turned.
Yeah, so McLean has to dive away, but he's taking cover behind some desks and whatever.
The real, real effeminate-looking German one bites it, right when the elevator opens.
Yeah.
That one that straight up looked like
the Fabio hair.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then some other guy just goes flying forward and face plants through one of the glass walls.
But having noticed McLean's feet, Hans tells his goons to shoot for the glass around him.
Yeah.
Until he traps John, in this kind of basically a sea of broken glass.
Yeah, he's running out of ammo. The Germans are closing in. He's got to choose between a giant douche and a turd sandwich.
He chooses the turd sandwich.
Yeah.
Every time.
Then one of the hockey pucks are thrown in again, and poof, he uses his powers to disappear yet again. Mm-hmm. I'm also not sure how they couldn't find him.
A real liberal application of flashbangs throughout this movie. They're I could just step around this corner and kill somebody, but I'm going to drop a flashbang because I have.
Well, that's a good point, though, Tony, because, there should have been a really noticeable blood trail.
Yeah, there certainly was when we see him again.
The only thing I could think of is they just write him off, because they're like, all right, well, his feet are destroyed, we have the detonators, we need to go put the detonators where they got to go.
Well, that's exactly what it was. There was a short line in there about, we have what we need.
Yeah, we do have what we need. Let's go. Yeah. But, so this is when McLean holds up in a bathroom, and we get...
Ooh, this is a brutal scene.
A little chat on the radio.
Cringeworthy, for sure.
This is a memorable scene.
From my childhood, any part of this movie that I had forgotten, this scene I remembered. I remembered where I was when I first saw it. It was like watching the Kennedy assassination.
And this is nothing an action hero's ever really had to go through before, they've taken, bullets and stuff.
I didn't realize you guys felt this, strongly about someone telling someone else they love them.
I see what you did there.
It's McLean trying to get a message to his wife about how he's, not even that he loves, just that he loves her, but that he's sorry in particular. But while he's doing it, he is pulling big, nasty shards of glass.
He has to just drag himself in the bathroom.
He's a trail of blood from his feet.
And just pull himself across the public restroom floor.
Plus, I love, not only that, but he then covers it up by ripping up that gross-ass tank top he was wearing.
Yes.
Oh, which by this point covered is just...
Oh, yeah.
It's a few shades away from pitch black with filth.
I mean, not even just talking about the dirt, but like other people's blood that's on there. Yeah. And, ooh, God.
He's got the AIDS for sure.
Yeah. But yeah, here we get our Gremlins Why I Hate Christmas moment where Carl tells him that he's actually not a beat cop. He is a desk cop now because he once had an accident and shot some poor kid, not realizing he had a toy gun instead of a real one.
Now he's very hesitant about using his gun.
Yeah. I mean, which, it kind of pays off later, but it's just, why did we have this?
And it's such a current hot topic, too. It's very relevant to very recent events. Mm.
But I think the reason they added it is because, unlike today's action movies, they actually developed the characters in this. So we actually have a connection to this guy.
Mm. Yeah, for such a minor character, like, we care a lot about.
Yeah, this does give him a lot of...
Because they started him as just this fat slob, and then they, like, really humanize him, so we're like, alright.
Also show him to have the most competent instincts out of any cop on the scene.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, I mean, really, like, if this were the 90s, this would be Chris Farley, and if this were the 2000s, this would be Kevin James, and it would suck.
Yeah.
And how.
This is what the FBI is like. You know what we need to do? Something stupid.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. So, first they play right into the hands of our terrorists and shut off all the power, letting them get through that last lock. So now they just run rampant and grabbing these bear bombs.
$600 million.
I mean, I understand the FBI's logic with this, I guess, of cutting power. Then presumably you'd go in with, like, night vision and have the advantage or whatever. But, like, I don't get the door. Like, electromagnetic lock would... like, open when you cut power. When you cut power, it should just be like, all right, well, now you can't open it.
Yeah.
That's how it should be designed.
Yeah, it's the 80s. They hadn't worked that part out yet.
They're trying to hack into it, and one of them's like, hey, you got it, Bill? And the other guy's like, no, not really. Come take a look. And there's, like, two guys just hanging out in plain sight, no cover whatsoever.
I also question if this shutting this off opened the door, why wouldn't have just done that for all the other locks and you could have just waited until this happened?
I've never seen such a dainty FBI breach at all.
Yeah.
Electromagnets, how do they work?
But also...
Don't talk to a German scientist.
Also not forget, the FBI's tactic is not to breach this place at all, but rather give in to their demands by sending a helicopter, but it's going to be a gun chopper and they're just going to shoot everyone down.
Straight up air assault.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, and that's literally step two of the plan, is air assault.
Yeah.
And they didn't even have the tact to try to make it look like a civilian helicopter or anything. Like, it was a military gunship.
Yep. It was a gunship.
Might as well have been a tomahawk.
It had rocket pods on the side.
Yeah, there seemed to be two of them, and I guess the plan was they were hoping you'd look more at the first copter?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, they had to transport 30 hostages.
Yeah. But, they actively say, you know, we're going to take out the terrorist threat here and 20% of the hostages, and that's acceptable numbers. They're just totally cool with murdering all these people here.
They're super excited about this chopper ride.
Yeah, they sure are. It's just like Saigon. But
a lot's kind of going on at once here, though, because, like, this is when, Carl gets in the vault, then, you know, Ode to Joy starts playing, he's getting all the bearer bonds. Yeah. Peck uses some dick moves to, like, get to the house of, the McLean's house and, like, threaten the maid with, being deported and called the INS.
Threatening her to be deported so he could get their kids on TV to, quote, say goodbye to their parents for the last time.
Yeah.
How fucked up is that? That's just... so wrong.
And you could tell by this point, you're like, this man's getting punched in the face. No way he's not.
But at this point, Hans is able to piece together that Holly is John's wife.
Yes.
Yep.
So he takes her hostage.
And he's sending all the other hostages up to the roof to, I guess, just be mowed down by the FBI. But he also has a double cross of his own, and he's just going to blow the whole roof and kill everybody.
Yeah. So the plan is they're going to blow the roof of the hostages as the helicopters land, and by the time the mess is all figured out, they're going to have gotten away in an ambulance that they've put inside their delivery truck so they can get themselves and the bearer bonds out.
I'm also not entirely sure how they plan on getting that out now.
What do you mean?
The ambulance is in the parking garage, which they locked down.
Well, the cops will open it up.
Yeah, they're...
And these cops are terrible, remember? Yeah. They're not going to check
things. I guess, yeah, we're banking on the cops will open it and let them roll out without looking inside or questioning.
We finally get our showdown between Carl and John.
We got a good showdown here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're firing at each other. Mm. The guns are ditched and he's just beating the shit out of them.
Dude, John gets, like, McClane punches the crap out of this dude, like, from go.
But this guy is too big and too German to really care.
Yeah. But I mean, he's like...
Yeah, this is
he's
like...
He's working the body.
Yeah, there's like a 23-hit combo breaker going on at the beginning of this, slamming him against these drums.
Carl has one hell of a life bar.
Yeah, like, I thought it was John McClane turned into E. Honda for a minute there.
Yeah, those are quick shots.
Yeah.
Finally, he gets him down. He makes some comment about, you know, how much his brother squealed when he broke his neck.
Yeah, he gets real sadistic, too.
Yeah. It's fucked up.
Like, again, we take that back to the elevator sequence and what happened there, and we're rooting for this guy. He's deeply fucking disturbed. Who does that?
Yeah.
Carl's put him through a lot.
He's got a few moments like that, even. Yeah. But yeah, he then throws a chain around this guy's neck and just kind of pushes him off and lets him slam against the wall and hang himself.
What I never realized up until this point was how cavalierly he holds on to the other end of the chain and slides down.
Whimsy, my friends.
Yeah, just driving Carl into the wall.
It's like a cowboy.
Yeah, he's enjoying the hell out of that.
And Carl's just hanging there.
Like Roy Rogers.
Just hanging out.
Gene Autry. Wait a
minute. And our other buddy there is the last henchman that's helping everybody to the roof. Just opens the door and gets shot. Yeah. He's done.
That was the Asian fella?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't put up much fight. No,
that's a hole?
At this point, we have Theo is getting into the ambulance with the bear bonds he's grabbed, and the limo driver sees what's going on, just rams the ambulance.
Like a fucking boss.
Argyle's been drinking for something. That's
true. I imagine that's also why he handles the crash a lot better.
Yeah, like,
and then he gets out and just punches the guy in the face.
Oh, he makes like a great like, "Woo!" as he gets punched.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Again, awesome limo driver. Not as an employee, but as your limo driver.
He's a great wingman, I'll grant you that.
Yeah.
No, he put the pieces together pretty well, pretty quickly. He just sees that ambulance. That's what happens in the garage, is the ambulance rolls out of the secret truck they used to break in to begin with. So that's how he's able to tell it's not just a standard ambulance. But yeah, he just charges right into the fucking side of the thing and then like, Falcon, boom!
Now, what we never get to see is, does he figure out the bail bonds are in the ambulance, put any in his limo, and make a run with it?
Fills the bear with
them. I'm going to say yes.
And then they're bear bonds.
Tony made that joke before.
Anyway, it's double bad now.
Not bad enough, it was a terrible joke. It was said twice.
But, now we're down to three terrorists.
It's like a Dane Cook stand-up.
You never listen to me, that's fine. We're down to three.
Don't worry, though, the FBI's like, we can still be things for John McClane to worry about.
Oh, right. He's trying to get the people off the roof before it explodes. Mm-hmm. So he's firing his gun in the air. They think he's a terrorist, so they start firing on him.
They being an FBI.
Yes. Officers. At which point he needs to get away, so he grabs a fire hose and just tries to make it down the side of this building.
Yeah, I don't get the decision here, like, rather than try to go for the... And I guess he knows the roof's going to explode, but with the amount of time it takes to set this up, plus, like, you're just going to be hanging off the side of the building...
Yeah, I can only guess it's more that the FBI's copter was over by the door and they know that's where he would head.
Back across to the stairwell.
But yeah, this is a very bad plan.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, this part does call for serious like suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, even though everything just somehow miraculously goes his way, it's still terrible because he's now hanging off the side of the building, has to swing into this window, firing at it, and just lands in a pile of glass again.
Mm-hmm. Well,
yep.
He's relying on a wheel being wedged into a corner. That's his whole support.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, his options are limited at this point, because the roof did blow as he was, like, jumping off.
And that part... But that's the thing. He was he was depending on this thing that's attached to the roof, but the roof's exploding.
Yes. Like...
Well, he didn't have a lot of options.
Yeah.
But then that part where he's, like, he's trying to get through the glass, and you see all the blood coming from his feet, and you're like,
oh, yeah. Yeah.
And or hot sauce.
Well, yeah, I mean, it wasn't very good. Like, yeah. I'll say, like, the blood effects in this movie in general were pretty funny. Yeah. Pretty silly. Except for the bathroom scene with his feet in the glass. Like, that was just, ugh.
Yeah, well.
Then when he gets in, though, suddenly it's like, oh, now I'm tied to this heavy-ass object that's falling off the building.
Yes.
But they nailed the tension in that sequence, like Rob commented while we were watching.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the tension in this movie is, like, spot on. Like, anytime it seems like he's going to possibly die, like, you actually, like, even though I've seen this movie many times, every time I'm like, oh my gosh, like, that tense up.
No, I gotta say, like, it really shouldn't have been that much, because he could have easily just braced his feet on those two windowsills, and, I mean, I know they're hurt, but if it's that or falling.
When you got that much of your foot missing from being torn open.
Yeah, but he's walking on them after. Either way,
he's not in a good...
Bottom line,
it's called practical effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's called actual stakes.
Well, yeah, if you make them human, make them seem like they can die, it's amazing how tense it can be.
Yeah.
And sadly, the buddy cop chapter of this movie ends with Johnson & Johnson being consumed in a fireball.
Yeah.
Destroys the entire helicopter.
Pretty awesome.
It's the end for the FBI.
Yeah. Keeping true with all, like, helicopter tropes in movies, it was so fucking close to the building that the fireball destroyed it. Well,
and, of course, it was just chock full of gasoline.
Yeah.
Went up real fast.
I never understand that one. Like, why are they always that close to where, like, where the monster can get them, or, I don't know. It's like...
They managed to create that kind of third tier of character archetypes. You got good guys, and you got bad guys, and then you got the guys that aren't necessarily bad guys, but you still want them to die.
Yeah.
Like, you lump them in with Ellis, and you're like, I'm totally okay with what just happened.
They're effectively bad guys.
Yeah.
And
Johnson Sr. was soaked in alcohol.
They were clearly like, we need extra people to die, and we can't have you feeling bad about them, so, yeah. But, now we're down to three terrorists left, and one of them is just taken out with a punch in the face as he comes through the door. The last two are standing there. Well, Hans and his buddy.
The security guard one.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Prior to this, we see, you know, he finds himself some duct tape or whatever, some packing tape, and seems to come up with a good idea.
Yeah, he's down to two bullets at this point.
Yes.
Yeah, they're very clear to show how many rounds he's got.
So
he's got a whole table full of Christmas wrapping supplies.
Yeah. So he comes in with the semi-automatic machine gun.
Now he is dragging himself.
Well, yes.
This dude is spent.
Yeah, he's clearly not walking well.
Hans has Holly.
He's got the gun to her head, and he's, you know, saying, you gotta back off and drop your gun. And, like, he's about to kill him with the, you know, line of yippee. Hi, a motherfucker. And just, he starts getting him with, like, a laugh, an awkward laugh, which stops him for some reason.
Yeah, everyone's, I like the one goon that's just like, should I be laughing?
Yeah.
I'm gonna laugh too.
Yeah.
I guess.
It's like Arrested Development where everyone starts clapping.
Yeah. I don't know why we're laughing.
Yeah.
I believe
the awkward laughter is ended by Holly just elbowing Al Rickman in the chest.
Yeah.
He shouts like Holly.
Shouts Holly. She elbows him. She gets down. He fires into his shoulder or whatever.
He has a gun taped to his back.
Oh, yes. Yeah. He has the gun taped to his back. Fires into his shoulder. Fires the other guy right in the head. Right between the eyes. So he's gone.
Boom, headshot.
Like, he fucking wastes time with the stupid, like, blow the smoke off the barrel.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, he's getting dragged out the window.
You gotta fulfill the cowboy scenario.
Not when it means your wife's life. Because, Hans falls out the window, but it's flinging to dear life onto Holly's hand. And she's about to go out the window.
Specifically the watch that was referenced by Bag Ellis earlier in the movie.
It's a Rolex.
It's a Rolex. Show him the watch. And he got real aggressive with that.
Yeah.
He's like, no, it's okay. Show him the watch!
Yeah, I'll see you later. You know what I mean?
So Al Rickman,
that was she's mine now.
His death scene, he does, like, he kills it in this scene. Just his face while he's the slow motion bringing the gun to bear. And then that look when he finally undoes the watch.
Yep.
And he's just like, oh, shit.
Yeah. That utter, like, fear that comes into his eyes as he's realizing, I'm going to die.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he starts plummeting.
He sure does.
There will be no like, bullshit like, you don't see how this fall ended, so I'll be back in the sequel.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
There's so much drama, so much tension, and then...
Yeah, you follow that all the way to the ground.
I love, we cut quickly to the police captain to say, I hope that wasn't one of the hostages.
Yeah. Instantaneous tension cut. Yeah. You're like, holy shit. And then they're
but like, not even like a, oh my god, not a, let's try and get something to capture them. Nothing. Just hope a, that wasn't a hostage. Yeah, hope that's something important.
He might as well have just said, I'm not very good at my job.
Yeah, yeah. You guys are getting Twinkies. Yeah. I hope that wasn't a hostage.
Yeah. But we get that thud and we know this is done.
Yep.
But so it's please start making finale. Their way in.
Well, he grabs Holly and it's just the grossest
He like, starts he tries to clean his face with her face.
I know he earned that one, but
he tries
but,
to
like,
clean her face with his mouth. He just he gets most of her face in his open mouth. It wasn't even a kiss.
Testosterone's pumping and all that, but like holy crap.
That's
and,
how I do it, man.
Yeah. I don't know how his testosterone was pumping, because he must have been out of blood.
That was his blood.
It all went to his boner.
Just replaced with testosterone.
And he finally meets Carl Winslow.
Yeah, they're making their way out. He meets Carl. They're
have a little buddy conversation.
Yeah, have a little bro hug and some questionable sexual tension, I think.
When all of a sudden, surprise!
Oh yeah,
Carl's not dead.
Carl is not dead.
Not Carl Winslow, the actual Carl.
Also, yeah, actual Carl is looking scary as fuck right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's kind of a zombie.
Yeah, he's had a bad day.
Oh yeah, he does not look like he should be breathing, but he gets up and somehow still has his gun.
Yeah, found the assault rifle somehow.
Yeah. So he aims that at McClane. He's looking to kill. And that's when Carl Winslow just opens fire and takes that fucker out.
It's like five rounds in him.
Yep. Yeah.
Carl has a huge life bar. And when you deplete it, it's like he's got another colored life bar under him.
Yeah.
He double was tap in the second on double phase. Tap.
Yeah. Yep.
Plus he's having PTSD of the kid that he shot. So he takes that guy out.
And then the newscaster comes up and he tries to interview them.
Yeah, and Holly just punches him in the face.
Yep.
The limo driver comes smashing through the gate, ready to pick them up.
The camera after he gets punched face like, did you get that?
Yeah. They get into the limo and drive off into happily ever after.
Retaining his late 80s title of King of the Douches. Not Bruce Willis, but... Yeah, I also like that whole, 1988 police debriefing of, like, I just walked away from a building that exploded where I killed so many people. You're just gonna go.
Bye.
Well, the deputy chief tried to stop him, but then Big Carl came out.
That's the funny thing for me, is, like, they set it up, like, yes, there's paperwork that needs to be done in this world, but, yeah, he's just gonna, fuck that, I'm done. Like, yeah. I get Carl shot the last guy, so now it's his work to do? I don't know.
Just delegation of murder.
Yeah.
Last person to kill somebody does the paperwork.
But yeah, so that's Die Hard.
I'm going to cut it there.
Yep. That was Die Hard from 1988. The critics gave it a 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, citing Die Hard is an action picture with a capital A. In fact, you might as well go ahead and capitalize the whole damn world. Word. Capitalize the whole damn word from Jay Boyard from Orlando Sentinel, and the audience gave it a 94%. What are your final thoughts?
94% sounds about right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we were all pretty clear about how we feel about this movie, like, in the beginning of the thing. I mean, Matt, you're the only one that hasn't seen it, like, all the way through.
Having watched an unadulterated version, like, in its entirety, we've been talking for a while about this, and I'm still pumped. Like, I could go home and kick my cat so hard it, like, flies through my girlfriend's head and just be like, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker. Like, wouldn't faze me. Like, I love this movie. It was great.
Yeah, so it's a recommend from both of you, I take it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, all the way.
I mean, I went into this thinking this is, like, the top tier end-all be-all action movie. Like, I have it where it's this and Aliens are my top two, and I can't decide between the two of them. I don't know if it's still that, because there were a few things that I forgot about that are kind of stupid in this movie,
But there's not many, and it's good. It's definitely in my top five. It's an amazing movie. I don't think I really need to say much else about it that we haven't already covered. Cast does a phenomenal performance. Director does really, really good job. Picked a cool setting. Just everything about it was cool. Total recommendation.
Yeah, same here. I don't find any faults in it, really. I mean, it's a product of its time. There's certain things that could have been improved, but at the time, that's just what you got. In fact, you usually didn't even get that. So I love that they set up a very simple premise. They had a very realistic person doing this. And besides a few outrageous stunts or whatever, it was pretty believable. And then just awesome action from start to finish. So yeah, I love this movie. Total recommend.
I'll put you like this. If this is what action movies were like today, I would be more excited about Rogue Nations.
Oh, for sure. Yep.
And I feel a little sad that, like, the action cinema has already kind of reached its peak sort of in the 80s, and it's sort of been going into a valley ever since. And really, like this is kind of the high point.
It is.
Yeah.
80s movies are...
They just did it better.
Yeah, they truly did.
For much less money.
It's sad, because a modern, like, action movie just has to be mediocre to stand out from the pack, because shitty is, like, the status quo.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Like, John Cena walking around blowing stuff up, or Mark Wahlberg walking around.
What? No!
Huh? What? I'm not eyeing your eggnog.
Ma'am, we're not.
What?
Ma'am, huh? No.
Are you
not
eyeing my lemonade?
I'm not even drinking lemonade.
Okay.
That's a very sweet drink. I've got three in.
So I'll tear your heart out with a spoon. Fuck it, Alan Rickman is awesome. This is great.
No arguments there.
Oh,
so,
man.
If people would like to tell us how much they love Alan Rickman or what their favorite action movie is, where can they find us, Ron?
Yeah, guys, totally. Let us know what your favorite action movie is. Let us know what your favorite Christmas movie is. Does it fall into an action movie category or something else entirely? So you can find us at the4ampodcast@gmail.com. That's the number 4ampodcast@gmail.com. You can also rate and review on iTunes and also subscribe to us there. Be a huge help if you wanted to go ahead and do that. Also, special thanks to Matt for coming on this episode.
Hi, guys. Thanks.
It was great to have you with us.
Thank you for joining us for this lovely holiday occasion.
Yeah.
And remember, it's
Leviosa! Oh!
Leviosa!
Stop it, Ron! Stop!
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Merry Christmas, guys.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. Stop it, Rob. Stop.
Bye.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again. It is 4 a.m., and that means it's time for the 4 a.m. podcast. I am your humble New York detective, as always, Tony. Join with me are my hostages. Or that doesn't make sense.
All right. Let's just roll with that.
It's okay. We all have Stockholm syndrome.
Nope, that's going to be the closure, I'm sure.
No, you're a New York detective, so that's totally crummy.